So in the middle of this ninth chapter of the Gospel of Luke, in many ways we come to the very center point of it. We come to that fulfillment of this question, who is Jesus? It's been building up throughout the ministry in Galilee. As Jesus has moved around, as he's taught the crowds, as he's healed the sick, as he's done these mighty deeds to point the way to the reality that he is the anointed one, the long-awaited Messiah, the one who would restore Israel. That solution, that question had been just a few days before. Luke tells us it was 8 days before when Jesus took this little group of disciples away from the rest up to the very northern part of Israel. And he asked that question, who do you say I am? Who do the crowds say I am? And Peter was the one who stepped forward and said, you are the Messiah, the Christ of God. So that seems to be the key for Jesus, that his identity has now been revealed, and now he can complete the equation. He can reveal all of his glory, not just the Messiah. David was one of the Messiah figures, that the kings of Israel were Messiah figures. But he's going to show that he's more than just a Messiah. He's also the true and holy one. And we can pass over the details because it just seems to be, you know, strange and weird, you know, this clothes becoming so dazzlingly bright and all of the scenes of suddenly there's these two great prophetic figures from the past, the prophet Moses and the prophet Elijah, all of these, you know, there in discussion. And Peter, we're told by all of the gospel authors, doesn't know what to say. And we can be equally silent, kind of wondering, well, what's this got to do with us? How can this change and transform us? And I think our other two readings provide the key into how this story can make sense of our own lives. In the first reading, we have from Genesis 15, the second time that the Lord makes this great promise to Abraham, that he will be the father of a great multitude of people. And Abraham, at this point, he's been in the promised land for many years. He's responded to the Lord. He left most of his family behind. He left all of his people all the way that he knew there in Chaldea. And he comes down to the promised land. And still, he and Sarah go childless. What on earth is going on? Lord, you promised us that if we made this journey, that you would be faithful, that you would bless us with a child. And still, they remain childless. And so Abraham says, well, you know, maybe one of the other children in the part of this clan, maybe that child will be the heir of the promise. And then it's God who says, no, let's take this outside and then go outside the tent, look up into the sky and count the stars if you can. Now, what time of the day is this event happening? Nighttime, right? No. We're in verse 5, we're told we go outside, look up into the sky. In verse 12, we're told, now the sun was beginning to set. In verse 17, we're told, now that it has grown dark. And the liturgy, you know, fashions the different verses that it quotes from. So we want to hear that, no, this isn't in darkness when Abraham is taken outside. It's in broad daylight. And how many stars can we count in the middle of the day? Just one. Are the rest of the stars still there? Yeah. But just the brightness of that one star is too much. And so all of the other stars, which we can see at night, are hidden from our sight. And I think that's a great insight for us to remember that sometimes the mysteries that we kind of wonder about, the things that are just, you know, things we want and we long for, but they can be hidden from our eyes, not from the darkness, but from the brightness of other things that are happening around us. And even so, Abraham, only being able to see one star, the sun, at this point, he still trusts in the Lord. He still places his hope and his trust. And Paul will say later on, that is what was counted to him as righteousness, that he put his hope, he put his trust, he put his faith in God, in his promises. And that wonder of what Abraham is able to do. He's not a perfect example. You know, when the sun begins to set, what happens? The Lord has to put him into a deep sleep. It's the same sleep that Adam is put into when the woman is taken from his side, not from his rib, but from his very side, his esna kenegdo, a helper unto him. And so this sense that God is the one who is doing this work in Abraham, and indeed even in Jesus at this point, this extraordinary transformation. And then bringing it all home, Paul tells us that we live in these wretched bodies. We know we feel the weight of our sin, we feel the weight of our dysfunction, we feel all of the ways we get things wrong and aren't able to respond faithfully to what God is calling us and inviting us into. But Paul says, God himself will transform these wretched bodies of ours, will transfigure them, using that same language of this, the feast that we celebrate today on this second Sunday in Lent, that God will do this work. And it's not us who has to respond. God is the one who is changing us, calling us, inviting us. Sometimes Lent can feel like a lot of hard work. You know, just this sense of, oh, this is, you know, it's too much for me to be able to respond so constantly to your call. And yet knowing that, no, it's God who's doing this, that God longs to change us. God longs to transform us. God longs to do this work, to bring about this restoration and this renewal, by reminding us that deep within he's already planted his word, deep within he's already there dwelling and longing to bring us to that fullness of life in him. During Lent, we're invited to be part of this journey, to see in Jesus the model and the example of what we can become, that God transfigured him, and God will also do the same in us, that God will shape us and change our hearts to be like unto God. That's what our lives are about, slowly being caught up in the mystery of God's love and responding moment by moment, step by step, into that same experience of love, so that in love we can be changed, in love we can be transformed by the work and power of God's love.